9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring today. Robert Half is here to help. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
Fitch downgrades America's credit rating, citing dysfunction in D.C. Plus, we'll look inside the latest criminal indictment over Donald Trump's efforts to reverse the 2020 election.
This one is particularly significant because the facts that are being alleged in the indictment seem to cut at the core of our democracy.
And is Tupperware the next meme stock? It's Wednesday, August 2nd. I'm Luke Vargas for The Wall Street Journal, and here is the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. Stock markets are lower this morning after Fitch Ratings downgraded the U.S. government's credit rating to AA+, one notch below its top AAA grade. That move comes just weeks after President Biden and congressional Republicans came to the brink of a historic default, with Fitch citing the growing debt burden and political dysfunction in Washington as factors in its decision. And here to unpack the significance of this downgrade is Wall Street Journal finance editor Matthew Thomas. Matthew, this is the first time in more than a decade that the U.S. has had its credit rating downgraded. What did Fitch say led them to this?
So they listed a few factors, but the key point they made was the erosion of governance in the U.S. And as you said, Luke, this really all refers back to the debt ceiling negotiations. Fitch clearly does not feel that there is an issue with the U.S. government's ability to pay back its debt. But there are questions over the willingness of politicians to do so and to come to terms on the, you know, various political horse trading that's necessary every time debt ceiling negotiations are on the cards again. So the downgrade, in many ways, is more about the politics than the economics.
Got it. If I remember correctly, back in 2011, when S&P downgraded the U.S., they did cite some of the dysfunction in Washington, but it seems like there was some anxiety about the sort of trajectory of the U.S. budget. Am I right to see a bit of a difference here in the reason for this downgrade?
There's definitely a difference in type between the two. I mean, also, the context of the S&P downgrade was, of course, that was only 2 years after the end of the global financial crisis. Still, there were major questions about the strength of the US financial system, but also the global economy. This was ahead of a European sovereign crisis. So it was a very different time then. This seems to be a bit more limited, really, to Washington dysfunction.
For their part, the Biden administration has blamed governance problems on the Trump administration and argued that the U.S. isn't at risk of missing its debt payments. And yet, Matthew, a significant move here nonetheless. What could this mean for the U.S. economy?
It's likely that in the near term, this is not going to have a major impact on the economy. Consumers are not going to change their decisions to buy goods or to take out a mortgage and purchase houses. Companies are unlikely to change their investment decisions based on this downgrade. And if you look at the market reaction right now, there doesn't seem to be a particularly violent reaction. Fitch had flagged this ahead of time. We all knew this was coming.
And just in terms of the market reaction we have seen so far, Matthew, stock markets are down in Asia and Europe, U.S. futures also lower. A swift reaction, but not dramatic. Is that right?
Yeah, exactly. So if you look at the movement of U.S. Treasury yields yesterday, they did rise. They hit just over 4.1%. That's the highest level since last November, right? That's the 10-year U.S. Treasury yield. U.S. equity futures are down today in Asia trading hours. But there are some caveats and exceptions that we should make. One thing, liquidity is pretty thin during Asian hours. So it's not like we can exactly tell right now what the response will be when all the traders in New York are at their desks. Another caveat is the dollar is stronger today. That is a surprising turn of events. But one thing we see a lot when there are moments of uncertainty in global markets, even when those moments of uncertainty are caused by the US, they tend to lead to a flow to US assets. Because even though the US might be becoming more risky, it's still the safest place to put your money.
On that, Matthew, how does the US now compare to other countries that have retained their AAA rating?
So it's an interesting question because we're in this strange situation where the center of the global financial system and by far the biggest issuer of government bonds in the world is now lower rated than countries like Singapore or Norway. And they will trade at cheaper levels for the US at some points in response to this. But the more interesting thing for me is if you expand the universe of AAA issuers beyond countries, there are companies in the US that are now considered more credit worthy than the government by two of the major three rating agencies. So Microsoft being the most obvious example. According to the credit rating companies, Microsoft is a safer place to put your money than the US government. That's a very strange situation. And it raises lots of questions about how you price investment decisions, including, by the way, for Microsoft. When Microsoft prices a investment, they will use the US government's yield as a risk-free rate. That's how they discount investment decisions. Should they now use their own bond yields as a risk-free rate? It's a fascinating but slightly bizarre world we're living in right now.
That was Wall Street Journal finance editor Matthew Thomas. Matthew, thanks so much for filling us in on this.
Thank you very much.
And let's get more now on last night's new indictment against former President Donald Trump, which came from a federal grand jury in Washington, D.C. Trump is being charged with four crimes in connection to his efforts to reverse the outcome of the 2020 election, among them conspiring against the rights of voters and conspiring to defraud the U.S. And while Trump is the only one being charged here, the indictment does describe six co-conspirators, including people identifiable as Rudy Giuliani, who worked with Trump to contest the election result. Wall Street Journal Justice Department reporter Sadie Gurman spent last night studying the indictment by special counsel Jack Smith.
This 45-page document paints a detailed portrait of Trump's efforts to press claims that the election had been marred by fraud, even though he was repeatedly told that they had no merit, and it shows the ways in which he leaned on officials in battleground states he had lost, including Arizona, Georgia, and Michigan, to support those efforts. And after those efforts failed, he pressed the Justice Department to falsely claim election fraud, urged Mike Pence to overturn the results, and then finally rallied his supporters to Washington and urged them to fight like hell just before they marched on the Capitol on January 6th.
And we should note that Trump has denied wrongdoing in this federal case and levied claims that he's being pursued for political reasons. And Sadie told us that Trump has said the same thing about charges against him in New York, as well as about an investigation in Georgia that's also relating to the 2020 election.
There is also a pending indictment at the state level by a local prosecutor in Fulton County, Georgia, who's looking at many of the same issues there. And there is another criminal case that's been brought by the district attorney in Manhattan, alleging an entirely different set of criminal conduct. So each one of these cases carries its own possibility of punishment and potential prison time. But this one is particularly significant because the facts that are being alleged in the indictment seem to cut at the core of our democracy. Jack Smith, the special counsel, stood up and basically said that Trump's lies targeted a bedrock function of the United States government. And that's the way in which we process, collect, and count and certify the presidential election. So it's just really a monumental moment to see something like this, as somebody who's covered the Justice Department for so long.
Unprecedented for the DOJ, but as Sadie told us, also for the effect that these indictments could have on the presidential race.
This basically ensures that Trump will be juggling courtroom appearances with campaign events for the foreseeable future. It comes as he's facing an additional federal indictment in Miami brought by the same special counsel over his handling of classified documents after he left the White House. This is a dramatically different set of facts, but carries steep penalties, just like the case in Florida, and basically ensures that these indictments and Trump's legal peril will be at the forefront of the presidential campaign for the foreseeable future.
Trump is scheduled to appear in federal court in Washington on Thursday. Coming up, crypto is illegal in China, but tell that to the $90 billion in crypto trading that occurred there in just 1 month. We've got that story, plus a look at whether the meme stock craze is back after the break.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.
Oil prices have surged to their highest levels in 3 months. That's thanks to an improving economic outlook and supply cuts from some of the world's biggest producers, which helped to send Brent futures 13% higher in July and West Texas Intermediate up 16%. And some analysts are expecting more gains to come, with barrel prices heading toward $100 after trading around $80 so far this year. Such a rise would quickly translate into higher gas prices for drivers, making life a little harder for Fed officials who are trying to bring inflation down to target. Shares in Tupperware have gained more than 700% over the past 2 weeks in a rally akin to meme stocks like GameStop and Bed Bath & Beyond. Yesterday, shares in the reusable container brand climbed to $4.95 a pop, up from just 62 cents on July 18th, according to Dow Jones Market Data. And as Journal Heard on the Street editor Spencer Jacob told me, there's been no positive news to drive Tupperware stock higher.
What do the meme stocks have in common? They're losers. They're names of yesteryear that are down and out, that suddenly have a flurry of interest. And the ingredients for that are that there is a problem, which there most certainly is with Tupperware. They have not filed their financial statements since last November. There are all sorts of misstatements that they've pointed out and material weaknesses. They are in danger of being delisted. And so there's heavy short interest, which means that there are professionals on Wall Street who are betting against the stock. And that's sort of blood in the water for meme stock traders, because the original meme stocks, AMC and GameStop, that's really what drew attention to them. The difference, though, with those is that there was such a flood of interest, and those companies were both able to capitalize on it and then raise a bunch of money from these enthusiastic Reddit-inspired investors. They tried to do the same thing with Bed Bath & Beyond, and it was unsuccessful. Even though they did raise a bunch of money, it wasn't enough to keep it out of bankruptcy. And I suspect the same might be the case for Tupperware ultimately.
Tupperware is due to report earnings later this morning. We are exclusively reporting that Binance, the world's largest crypto exchange, has remained active in China despite the country banning cryptocurrencies in 2021. Users traded $90 billion of cryptocurrency-related assets in China in May this year, according to internal figures viewed by the Journal. And finance reporter Patricia Kausman says that makes China Binance's biggest market.
Trading is supposedly all fully banned in China. But what we found based on the documents and people we spoke with is that there are workarounds. So, for example, one thing Chinese users may do is use VPNs, which is that application that masks their location, so they can sign up on the exchange. China is fully aware. We don't know the extent of the awareness in terms of if they know exactly how much is being traded, but there are law enforcement agents in China that actually work with Binance when they try to detect potential criminal activity among the users. So it shows like China is aware that this trading exists. And it's important to notice also that Binance is not the only one. There are other cryptocurrency exchanges that have a pretty healthy business in China.
China's central bank, which imposed the crypto ban, didn't respond to a request for comment. After months of warnings, Meta Platforms said yesterday that it has begun blocking access to news links for Facebook and Instagram users in Canada. That decision comes amid a standoff over a new Canadian law that requires digital platforms to pay for news content, legislation that Meta and Alphabet's Google firmly oppose. Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau has likened the fight with Meta and Google to World War II, telling reporters last month that, quote, Canadians will not be bullied by billionaires in the U.S. And there has been a dramatic drop in Americans in their 40s and 50s who attend church. According to a survey by Arizona Christian University, the percentage of people in the age group who attended church during the week fell to 28% in 2023, down from 41% in 2020. Gen Xers often identify with a religion but are also in the thick of raising kids while juggling other responsibilities, such as the demands of work. Others got out of the habit during the pandemic or have become disillusioned by church scandals or positions on social issues. And finally, how about we eat out tonight? It's a compelling proposition that is leading Americans to spend more than ever dining outside of their own homes. According to the National Restaurant Association, Americans will spend a whopping $997 billion this year at restaurants, bars, and other eateries, and that's before tips. Journal editor Quinton Webb told us what we can learn from that record tab.
So that's a $1 trillion bill in restaurants for Americans this year. Not just eating in, of course, a lot of it is actually takeout, drive-through, etc. What it tells us, first of all, is that this appetite for getting food from restaurants is undimmed. And at least one analyst says this is somewhat surprising given the efforts that the Federal Reserve has taken to cool demand in the economy this year. Another way to think about it, of course, is that it partly reflects surging inflation. So food prices have gone up a lot, and of course, wages have gone up a lot for food service workers. So those two things are feeding into bigger checks when you eat out.
And that's What's News for Wednesday morning. We'll be back tonight with a new show. I'm Luke Vargas for The Wall Street Journal, currently rethinking my own plans to eat leftovers for lunch. Thanks for listening.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.